예, 준비했습니다.
나부터 시작할게요.
스탠바이 큐.
Hello, this is Corner Station from Seoul. We are here today with Douglas Park, an artist from UK, for the exhibition called Douglasism, with Gregory Mas from Kim King Gallery. Kim King Gallery is organizing an exhibition, which is an interesting art project referring to artist's own name. So, hello.
Hello. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for coming.
In fact, thank you for originating, and in fact, for you very much for inviting us to appear in this interview.
My first question is about your. It may be a bit personal, but is part your original family name, or is it also part of your persona?
It is my birth name.
Oh, Park. Really?
I'm not one of these artists whose name is like an artwork, like Billy Apple or Ian Baxter and or Genesis P. Orridge or Goran Artist Anonym Turbuljak or someone I've worked with, Gideon Sherman, who makes work changing his name by deed poll. It's like New Gideon Sherman, Gideon Cube Sherman, or Gideon Mobius Sherman. But my birth name is Park, which I understand by coincidence, alongside Kim and Jung, a very well-known family name here in Korea. Yeah. What is the meaning of the word Park in Korean language or culture?
I need to look it up.
Is it like Smith in English, or Patel in Indian, like or whatever Takahashi means in Japanese?
Three or five biggest Korean last name. I think so. I have to look it up. But it's very common.
But it is honestly my birth name.
Yeah, because I thought that's also one of the personas that you created.
I don't work with personas. I suppose much of what I do, as well as what is, I suppose, self-conscious or deliberate or intentional or premeditated, I suppose what I find myself becoming aware of is I basically react to or engage with opportunities or commissions or collaborations which are mostly connected with working with other people, I suppose, working with other people or other people's practices. As I think I've said several times, almost living through other people's activities in terms of my own production or outlet. Much of what I do is input, but it is often produced or coming across in a very sort of autonomous or self-important way. But again, it's not something I necessarily set out to do. It's in many ways, and I'm certainly all too aware of this, but it is, I suppose, the way things work out. And it then seems to become very consistent.
You have a very, so for the audience, you have a very peculiar voice, I think. Many people think that. And it's like
even in the United Kingdom.
Even in the United Kingdom, it's over-pronounced, over-chiseled speaking voice. Tell us about that. The role of your voice in your art. Did you artificially train yourself, or just, evidently, train yourself to...
I'm not sure what the actual answer to this is, because again, it doesn't relate to anything I was ever... I mean, for instance, especially if I'm saying something of importance, as I am now, I actually try very much to almost listen to or physically feel what I am saying at the very time, almost as I'm looking at myself, visually looking at myself. I'm when I'm saying things off the cuff, which may relate to ready-made reality that already exists, as I am now, there is an attempt to at least control or perfect the quality or form or sound, you might say, the image of my voice, a synesthesiac. If I'm reciting or recording something that I have already written, there's far more sort of effort or channeling that I summon up and do my utmost to exercise and use. Again, it's almost as though, similar to my writing or what I describe or the perceptual or physical or cultural presence or experience of my output, what I do, it's almost as though it were something physical made of material, you know, say sculpture or objects or environments or kinetic art or earthworks or buildings, architecture, or perhaps a visual image only happening to exist, be made out of language, to be read, looked at, heard, ignored, or maybe to have some less tangible effect upon people. I mean, that's a perfectly valid question, but I'm not really sure beyond what I just attempted to say I'm not really sure if or how that could actually be answered.
That was a very nice answer. Please, next.
Yeah, rather long one.
Yes,
rather rambling as well.
I heard that 2013, this year, has been your 20th anniversary since you debuted as an artist.
My 20th?
Yeah, is that
true? I've been involved in things since I was... I don't know the significance of that.
What was your first artwork or first...
I think I started making art, as you know, I suppose as a kid in the 1980s amid otherwise rather unfortunate external circumstances.
What is that, the rather unfortunate?
Where did prefer you not to say.
A sort of a backwater, a suburb some distance from London in the southeast of the United Kingdom, where I still, again, because of circumstances, not because of some kind of choice or merit or flexibility to the situation, I'm still stuck living or existing now when I'm not elsewhere. But I mean, I've been involved in things as far back, I suppose, as the late 1980s when I was a teenager. But when I did actually produce visual art, there was some outlet for some of it. I was never perhaps I was sort of an isolated person. I wasn't particularly adept at always dealing with opportunities, or if anything fell through or went wrong. And then because of other things in my personal life, I tended just to abandon that. My present semi or almost or non career began, I suppose, at the end of the 1990s or around the year 2000, when whatever it was I had ever deluded myself or deceived others that I did, I had long since quit.
What do you think, like, when somebody like me says your work is more immaterial, like, meaning you don't have a tangible product. Actually, it's totally wrong to say that. It's like a distinction between software and hardware.
Yes.
In the end, there is no distinction.
Or a service and a product.
Yes. And what do you think about, what's your opinion, or how do you feel about that? Or is that a good point, or is immateriality, is that interesting to you?
I don't think I'm exactly one of these people like the English Dadaist Arthur Craven, or... okay, the man was quite an important social figure, but in the 18th century, one of the first distinguished free slaves was the coffee trader, Ignacio Sanchez. Although his correspondence is almost like letter writing in the style of Lawrence Stern, with a lot of found, banal language used in to very humorous ends. Or other people, you know, it's disputable what they, you know, members without portfolio, like bears in the Happy Mondays, or the Vienna author, who is also quite important mathematics and logic and technology expert, Oswald Wiener, who did write, if not a novel, a book work presenting philosophical findings called The Besserungen des Mitteleuropa, the improvement or the betterment or the salvation of Middle Europe.
So what do you think about immateriality?
Immateriality. The strange thing is I don't... You know, like, for instance, artworks that often seem to take the form of absence or removal, as though it were something more present, sort of like that sort of survey exhibition of which the book was the real production in Paris, but also toured to Switzerland, Voids, a retrospective, which was basically a retrospective of all the greatest voids of all time, like Yves Klein, Martin Creed. Neither of the two venues was it on for very long, but the book, of which there's an English and also a French edition, I think as I jested once, was it was a survey of all different forms of nothing or different reasons for doing nothing.
But I don't think it's not an issue of nothing, emptiness and void.
No.
And,
which at most is just simply an aspect of what I do.
You didn't hear that yet from... Clemens Krümmer, he said...
I haven't got access to what he has written.
He very brilliantly said it's just that any creation passes through a moment of immateriality.
And much that I do does actually exist in the physical material
world.
And you do have to also consider the...
It's just a wrong
what I
issue,
invent
actually.
In my prose or my stories,
yes.
Which I mean, for some years now have become increasingly identical.
And nobody would complain to an opera singer that her work is immaterial.
No. I don't know why people even actually bother. Although then again, a lot of the obvious side of my work is most akin to literature.
Yes.
Rather than art, which, and I've not had very much to do with contemporary literature. I mean, I know people involved in it. And I did once have a paid job as an editorial assistant or assistant editor for the London magazine.
May I ask you about, because yesterday we talked about
Ian Hamilton Finlay.
Finlay, and that this person,
well, also all these
was
people
considered by you nearly as an idol kind.
Well, he had when he informed a lot of my visual work. Although I suspect if I'd ever had anything to do with him, I'd have probably there'd have been some clash or fallout, as there had been with any. Body or thing else he, Ian Hamilton Finlay, in any way crossed paths or swords with. But there is, I think I have said this before, I am almost the opposite of these former authors or people of letters or literary authors who then became more exposed or successful even as visual artists. Marcel Brutheis, Vito Acconci, Ian Hamilton Finlay, Jochen Geertz, Emmett Williams, Henri Michaud, it's Jean-Claude Silberman, etc., etc., etc. But there's all these common threads between their earlier work and what they went on to do. One practice very much informed the other, but just in superficial or real terms seems to have taken a different form or operated in a different part of culture.
So how do you see your, because your work or your performance oftenly relates to text or text
yes.
you wrote or your reciting?
Recital, with or without ad-libbed commentary.
How do you see your relationship to the contemporary literature or this kind of early, like 60s performance artists?
Again, I am more akin to almost... Yeah. somebody or something from a previous time and place transported into the present day, somewhat anachronistic, or somehow trying to adapt or survive or make sense of or engage with, you know, contemporary reality, art or real life or politics or society, whatever. One difference between myself and, say, a novelist would be, unless I was right, I have sometimes written quite lengthy meta-literature about projects I have been involved, specific projects I've been involved with or aspects of my work, like inside story, behind the scenery, much insight and lowdown in them. I doubt, for instance, I'd be able or prepared to write a novel, even though that's actually got more to do with publishers and editors than the obvious author. And also, as much by circumstance rather than any choice or decision, but again, it's one of these things I'm fully aware of, most of my, usually the origination of my work, it's then it's, you know, the development and finalization stage of myself producing it, and then the outlet that it gets is most of the time invariably connected with the, you know, visual art or instead of visual art. It is very much my presence.
It's very visual.
You mean what I describe? Almost the look of my work.
Yes.
Say if you see it published in in a book,
even
in a periodical, online.
Even the thematic, like, okay, a nigh on compulsory cliché, it's very visual.
Yes. And also...
The more surrealistic texts also.
Yes, well, what they describe...
The it's not like...
They're what I could never have done as a visual artist... Just as I'm almost trying to stretch what is or isn't physically possible in both natural and artificial reality, and may, somehow rather passing it off as though it's normal or even boring. And then there's this moral ambiguity,
mm-hmm.
especially when I'm referring to things being quite harmful or, you know, harm or wrongdoing of any nature, especially sort of corporate or governmental or interpersonal. There's this ambiguity, especially as regards the environment, just as the places or the processes I'm describing, it's this reality that's neither natural nor artificial. It's both familiar but also very strange. And there's this deliberate moral ambiguity to it. And the phrasing is very like that.
And This is interesting for me personally. I would like to know more about that because how do you, me, I get the impression through your text on the one side you are very humorous.
Yes.
And on the other side it's a very dark apparition. Also our archival show is called Itemized Miasma.
Dynamic so Inventory. Like, well, that's my attempt to summarize what I do.
The miasma is at the center. Yes. So describe the miasma, where is this coming from, if you know, or in what way is it interesting to you, or how would you describe it if you can?
Miasma.
Or this darker side of your work, the humorous side is very
well obvious. I very much like contrasting, almost as though you were just simply dealing with physical materials or imagery or qualities with their associations and meanings and physical properties, playing things off against each other, either making them contrast or somehow or other emerge or blend or hybrid of them. And again, the way I try to pass everything off and make it come across, almost as I'm sort of getting away with it, or and also something I'm very keen on is myself not as an author or even a discoverer. This reality just existing anyway, without any culpability or accountability, nobody to or nothing to blame or praise for it. It just exists, which is how most people accept reality anyway, in a way that just seems to go without saying. And even if you can, it is not clear what, if anything, can be done to change or even just survive or improve, personal or collective circumstances or conditions.
How do you see the authorship in contemporary art practice? Because you appeared in a lot of other people's, other artists' artworks, and your presence is very strong. Do you see them as of your artwork, or is it like
In a sort of positive or enlightened or utopian way, there is this friendship. You know, some of these people, you know, we are actually lifelong nodding acquaintances, some of them. Some of them can just about remember who I am. The notion of collaboration, if that's viewed in a romantic or optimistic, positive way, okay, there's also challenges, same as there are to any and everything. But also, there's perhaps me, in both senses of the word, being marginalised, which could mean I'm exploited or victimised or invisible, but I could also be parasitic or exploitative myself, or deliberately or negligently harmful, damaging, either within that collaborative situation or some wider reality. It sort of creates an opportunity or an excuse or justification for myself just maybe to get something done and for something to exist in reality, which I am and am not to blame or praise for. I mean, I do originate ideas or even whole works all the time. I don't only make work to order, or if somebody invites me, or if for whatever reason I've got myself involved in something, I'm not sure how I myself would be doing something that was only by or about my own work, which is one of the reasons I'm extremely grateful to Gregory Nayungim, Kim Kim Gallery, and all others involved in Douglasism Festival project activities. New works.
Let's talk about Douglasism. The audience doesn't know where this term is coming from.
Yeah, what is Douglasism?
Well, in 2005, when there was my 33rd birthday, people involved in this London collective called Decima, mostly Alex Chappell and David C. West, there was a party on my 33rd birthday when Alex Chappell had a gallery above a pub in Clerkenwell.
It's good, the other gallery upstairs, that's the...
And there was this one-day event, Douglasisms, where phrases I'd often come up with appeared on a cartoon of based on me by Piers Wardle, who sometimes called himself Lewis Draper, an artist who is no longer with us, having sadly died of a brain hemorrhage rather unexpectedly several years ago. It was an anagram, Lewis Draper, Piers Wardle, not a palindrome. A palindrome is symmetrical, like a Rorschach ink blot.
Oh, yeah, of course.
That's the difference between Andre Tompkins and Una Kerzin. And, or rather, Andre Tompkins and Dom Sylvester, who had died, versus Una Kerzin and Jean Dupuis. But the Douglasisms were based on things, you know, phrases I've invented or ready-made language that I've appropriated in speech or communication or writing. And there were, people were invited to come up with their own Douglasisms by filling in speech bubbles on the cartoons. Decima, as I said, Alex Chappell and David C. West are a venture that's existed working in all manner of mediums with many people since the late 1990s, often working with the media. And they've done some extremely fun events and shows and projects over the years. But that's basically the origin of Douglasism. It's a reference to Douglasisms, Douglas Day, 23rd of January, 2005.
What else, what other project have you done under the name of Douglasism?
Well, in connection with Kim Kim Gallery, there have been, although this is my first ever visit to Korea, there have been exhibitions, most notably at the art fair last year. That was last year, 2012.
Yes. Guangzhou Art Fair.
Of examples of either photographs of me, myself, as well as collaborating with people on moving image work, acting in other people's videos and films or events, copies of publications I had contributed to, or ephemera and other such material and works by and about myself and other people I've been involved with or worked with in whatever capacity. But and I believe, as well as through people who already knew about me or knew me or worked with me, who happened to visit Guangzhou Art Fair, or were also involved, and also the Biennale. There was a lot, I understand, a lot of public and art world interest in it, me. And there were even people, I understand, who seriously doubted or questioned or didn't believe, you know, they seemed to think that I didn't, that, is Douglas Park a real person?
Yes, there,
they seriously believed
there,
that...
Few people were thinking it's a work of an artificial persona. of Nayeong and me.
How did you meet Nayeong and Gregory?
We met in 2006 at AIR, Artist in Residence, in Antwerp in Belgium, when we were all on the same art residency.
It's a very bizarre house. It looks like
it's
heavy.
It's an old house where lock keepers of the mechanical bridge would have lived or worked, and it's in the it's almost as though you're in the middle of nowhere, but you're next door to the centre of the city,
and
you get like battleships. You can see battleships out of the kitchen window. They sort of dreamlike environment. I'd stayed there quite a lot before then, such as when I was still building the place. And I've stayed there and been involved in things since then. There recently was a book published, which we and all the other ex-survivors and casualties and victims of AIR have contributed to, called AIR Traces.
When did it first open?
Pardon?
When did AIR first open?
Well, I stayed there when they were still rebuilding the house in 2001, when I was on another residency in Nantes in France, which was through the art school there, and we had visited, I think that was the first time I properly visited Belgium, 2001, and I stayed, myself and some other members of the Cycle Post Diplôme International, were hosted in AIR when they were still rebuilding it, and I stayed there again several years later when I was involved in an exhibition and various linked events at the MUCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art in Antwerp.
And then we met again by accident in the Hayward Gallery.
Mostly online. Well, it was on the cards. It was last year. We were going to meet in London, and I happened to be in London that day, and I knew about this private view of an art. I forget it was a Korean artist, but I can't remember that.
Okay.
At the Hayward. And you tried to get me into the Tank project at the Tate Modern, of which I am a friend of the Tate, although that wouldn't allow me to go.
Douglas is infamous, so they didn't let him in.
Yeah, and some real creep just sneaked in while we were trying to argue my way in. And there were all these other sort of people who were fixtures of the art world waiting around outside for their contacts to turn up. But then you turned up to an event I was involved with, not far from where the Douglasisms event took place, in the Betsy Trotswood pub, which hosts a lot of events and meetings. I was speaking at Orlando Harrison's The Poltroon, literary saloon in the function rooms of a pub. And you filmed me there.
I photographed me, yes.
And of course we met up quite a few times when you were revisiting London this year.
Mm.
And I introduced you to some people like Blaise Luxembourg, Keith Winter.
Mm.
Yes.
So I heard that you've been for the Douglasism in Korea. You've been producing a lot of artwork, collaborating with the Korean artists. What kind of artwork?
Well, most of that's been so far by contact or things that are going to happen.
Okay.
Actually, that started this morning.
Yes.
No?
Really?
Well, myself acting in the film. Moving things about in Gagarin, for A. Douglas Park. A park named after me.
Yes.
Who did you collaborate for this morning? Uthun. Uthun Uk.
Yes. Uthun Uk. And her, are they her students from the university?
Yes.
How did you select the Korean artists for the Douglasism this year?
It was a very difficult process and not everybody succeeded.
Yeah.
How
did you select the artists for Douglas?
Select?
Yeah, or how did you choose?
Well, I suppose the people who are in Douglasism are people who I have worked with or any, or, you know, the production and the outlet for my work was linked to them. So they'll be like, in terms of like an actual exhibition, there'll be copies of publications, editions, ephemera, invites, moving image, people that I have worked with, or people who've just photographed me in social situations.
We choose, we from Naomi of Kim Kim Gallery, we choose the right venue, the right concept of the show, and the right artist, and we make it fit together. That is our work. We try to concatenate, to unchain, to build a chain of these three substances and turn it into something creatively good.
Yes.
And we have a certain choice of artist, and you might refer to very often as outsider art, but I don't
like outsider art. Usually makes me think of, I think maybe more maverick is a better word, because outsider art makes me think
it's just somebody was an outsider before. It doesn't make much sense.
Yes.
What is outsider art?
I don't know.
Well, it's usually used to mean work by people, even though a lot of them are quite self-conscious. And obviously there'll be some awareness of visual material, high or low visual material. Outsider art is often a word used to describe art by people with mental health problems, people who may or may not be prophets or mediums or psychics or clairvoyants. It often ties in with some kind of cosmology or worldview or notions of visions. It's even beyond what you might call naive art by people like Henri Rousseau or Grandma Moses, or just self-taught artists.
Yes, yes.
Or professional artists who almost want to be amateurs, like Kurt Schwitters or David Smith or Billy Childish.
There's another term which is much more fitting, I think.
Maverick.
Maverick or mannerist.
Mannerist, mannerist.
Yes.
Mannerism, I thought, was a specific word to describe usually more eccentric art from bygone eras, before the modern age, whether it was painting, literature, illustration, like fantastic art, but there's still sort of much pragmatic production.
Let's enlarge this mannerism, this historic academic term, into something more vital, and we could find ourselves in it somewhere.
Finding ourselves in mannerism. Is that or is that not a good thing, the meaning of that? Does that mean, is that positive or negative, to find oneself or oneselves in mannerism?
Maybe not.
I mean, you seem to have such a good knowledge in art history.
Yes.
And how did you go to art school?
I did.
It's a bit this strange question, but how did you study, or where did you study, or how
mostly,
did you get the oldest?
I mean, I have actually with or without taking exams, I have actually studied things properly, although mostly that was just sort of validation, you know, in the hope of employment or whatever, rather than learning anything. I suppose from an early age, I had a tendency to almost involuntarily, almost like some kind of recreational kind of academic research, rather escapist and nostalgist, anesthetic. Had this, interest in art history, probably because art is a specified subject or area that can concern or relate to, or can include, at least supposedly can include, any and everything. It's supposedly rather universal and all-encompassing area.
It's like
I suppose the nearest I've ever done to actually any serious research or findings that is, you know, serious art history is my ongoing project or survey by accident, which is trying to identify case studies and specimens of works and artists whereby, okay, circumstances can affect the production of artwork or artworks or events at any time, or can even be caused by or because of artworks and events or producing them, but, you know, physical damage, interpersonal falling out, legal or criminal justice problems, issues with resources. But supposing the artist at least considered that change to become part of the same work, maybe changing the work because of it, you know, acting upon it, including it in the work, making other work about it, or even if it led to something completely new in their, you know, complete change or redirection in their life or work. There has previously been one incarnation of by accident, whereby a very simple, I think it's only alphabetical, it's not categoric, because I just really didn't have the time, version of almost like the notes towards what I've very much improved upon since then, was published almost like a fanzine for an exhibition of sorts presented by a Belgian collective I very often work with, Sonia Dermions and Complot, which was presented at Le Commissariat, a project and event space in Paris, because myself and Sonia both knew this French curator who was involved with Le Commissariat at the time, Damien Hérault.
And both will come to...
Yes, and both will be visiting Korea in the very near future in connection with Douglasism.
And there will be a remake...
by accident.
Reincarnation of by
accident. New and improved version. Updated. Yes. A new and improved, updated version of the publication, public lectures, and possibly a show of sorts, of some nature, even if it's simply of digital images or one of these exhibitions where events and publications are some or most or all of the sum total of the exhibition. But that's the sort of thing, if it ever was done properly, it would, you know, that would take a very major art museum to produce.
I heard that you were in Jeju Island for a film shoot.
I'd arrived in Seoul last week, myself and Sel Krabiels from Belgium, as we knew we were going to, went out to Jeju Island, a volcanic, geologically it's volcanic. As a society, it is very interesting in that it is a matriarchy, it is self-governing, and as well as agriculture, the main industry and economy of Jeju Island is national and international tourism and holidays, vacations and leisure activities. Sel Krabiels was perhaps more Sel Krabiels' project or work than mine, but I was acting. Very much a latter day version of Jacques Tati's Les Vacances de Monsieur Hulot, doing public readings in, for instance, at the waterfall or on a very rocky beach, autographing photographs of myself. And there was also photographs taken of me by the photographer who lives on Jeju Island, Hoksun Kim. And we, one thing we intended to do was actually to film myself standing at the crater of the, I think, dormant volcano, but it and reciting my work there. But it seemed it wasn't. We could not get permission to do that. And Sel Krabils wanted to use like a smoke machine. And we did. We managed to find a gallery overlooking on the cliff, just near the shore, not far from both the hotels we stayed at, Vucrest Gallery, who allowed us to use their courtyard for a reading of me, which Sel filmed, and also photographs taken by Hoksun Kim, who also photographed me in other locations. We missed the recent typhoon, and I hope that all is well for anybody on Jeju Island at this time, because I understand it hasn't. There had been a recent, I think, storm or typhoon just before myself and Sel arrived there. It did sometimes get very windy or very wet, but I understand there's a possibility the typhoon may return again. I'm very sort of concerned and anxious for all those who may well be affected or involved in that.
I heard that this is your first time to Asia?
I remember, well, as a kid, I had, I think, been one or two airports going to or from somewhere. That's many decades ago. I have published in China and Japan and Thailand, and I am on a website in Pakistan. But any possible visits, for instance, I nearly visited Osaka in Japan in connection with another Belgian. Many of my serial collaborative partners in crime are Belgian.
How does... Yes.
Vadim Vosters invited me to write a trilogy of literary prose, you might say stories, instead of writing essays. But because of, I think, the cost of designing the catalogue, there wasn't a budget for me to visit Osaka, and perform there. But as I said, I was in a survey of British art, Metropolis Rise, organised by Tony Gross and Jen Wu. I've known Tony Gross since the early 1990s, and I've acted in his three times stereotype cast me as a Columbo-type personage in movies that he's done. And I'll be some of them in the Douglasism Festival. Metropolis Rise, survey of British art, toured Beijing and Shanghai when I was at the air residency in Antwerp, as well as his publication in Japan, a book project about certain issues in Thailand, although I did not go out there. And I have what I call an almost kind of normal piece of writing on Art Now Pakistan about the artist and lawyer Iqbal Jeffrey, who is one of the case studies in several categories of by accident. And Iqbal Jeffrey is he's another maverick. More than worth checking out as an artist and as a social figure.
So, since this is your first visit to Korea?
Yes, first time I've ever actually been here, yes.
How do you see the Korean audience.
I'm still trying to come to terms with Korea, get my head around it. I attempted to familiarize myself with the customs, and I abandoned trying to acquire and use the language before I came here.
Douglas can write his name in Korean.
Yeah. I have to copy it though. But okay. It was somebody your end of
I didn't see that.
Translated my name into Korean characters.
So what's your expectation from Douglas's expression in Korea?
I suppose at the moment a somber, giant, hovering, very ominous question mark. Not necessarily rightly or wrongly optimistic, threatening.
Black.
Well, it's not necessarily a specific colour, but somber. That's a sort of tone or quality or condition of colour or material or light. Not sickly
green,
no.
Question mark.
Not maybe a non-colour, not necessarily a disagreeable or nasty colour. It's not necessarily threatening or dangerous, just as it's not necessarily optimistic or promising. Everything's very uncertain. It's extremely difficult for me to even say what has come to me so far about visiting Korea or what I have tried to before, you know, in the over the time during the lead up to my visit and stay here, at least trying to familiarize myself with the earlier history and the present situation and the possible future of Korea.
There will be more than 14 events.
Very overwhelming. It's also complex and very overwhelming for me, just for myself. Never mind if I even attempt
to say something
about it.
There will be 7 different shows or venues and at least 14 activities, counting this activity as one of them.
Yes.
Is that part of your concept to have this many of series of events and exhibitions?
Actually, it's not his concept. It's like the concept we made him like. So we didn't give him a choice. It's more like we presented him with the outcome of our doings.
Yeah, so what's the concept?
I am almost the subject matter or the fodder for this blank slate.
Douglas worked with so many people, he collaborated with so many people over so many different subjects, and he has also his own solo career, whatever that is.
Yes.
His individual work.
Myself either constantly disappearing into things or being just another presence or cog in the wheel, or myself almost taking things over, which is mostly what my input
but
or presence in things
is. But you
can't
bring everything together.
Yeah.
So,
it's impossible.
It's impossible, but this will be just another collaboration, a bigger one in the end, but maybe it will clarify, it will give a better perspective on the all-over perspective on the work and production.
What's the earliest work that you'll be showing in the festival?
I think it's the cartoon movie we discovered lately.
A cartoon movie?
Yes, with all these...
When was it made?
You, and there's a speech bubble.
A movie or a...
Yeah, it's a short movie, and it's maybe Louis Draper who made it. We are not sure yet.
Was this from Decima?
That would be
2005. That's not early.
It's a movie that's our, I think...
That's 2005.
Not so long. So what's the earliest we have?
The earliest? You mean in terms of actual... the outlet of work,
yeah.
Because especially when say in the quartet of, I suppose, stories I have in the Bastard Magnetic Speech number of Clementine de Lis's Metronome, 2001, those are basically unfinished business left over from my previous visual art days, either visual versions, written lingual or literary, prosaic versions of artwork I had done, or designed, or attempted, or made, or things I wasn't able to find form for, or wasn't really able to get off the ground.
What was your visual art days like?
Visual art. Mostly self-educated. I operated independently. I mean, people did know about me. There were some outlets. I had a tendency to abandon things. Although there's some crossover or connection, I mean, sometimes even titles of my works are slogans or names I had invented as a visual artist, like Dream Key Zodiac, Pandora's Ark, or ESP, Eonage, which is like a cross between extrasensory perception or psychic powers and espionage or spying. They were much more deadpan. Excuses to use language and present, whether it was things I'd authored myself, found language, modified language, quotes. It was excuses to make art, even though I had no idea really how to work with opportunities, or I tended often just to often run away from them or just abandon it if things fell through or went wrong. And also there were other factors in my life at the time. Although what I do now is far more flexible and I find myself far more prolific, not just exposed and known about. It's not always valid to say something is easy or beneficial, but it's certainly possible, however sometimes difficult or challenging or problematic, for me to get things done or for opportunities to arise.
I had always
written anyway, with or without any outlet for it, whether it was relatively conventional essays or more, you know, literary prose or written art.
So
there is a lot of regurgitation and recycling in my work.
Apropos of recycling, yes. Can you recycle something for us? What kind of text will you read to us?
It won't actually be a typical Douglas Park world, landscape, meteorological, weather, architecture, force field, miracle or disaster. But very almost sort of identical formula or policy of how imagery is conjured up and then described and presented, and then the use of words, language and phrasing as a much more corporal and bodily text. And I haven't invented a strange title for it. It's got a ready-made phrase for a title, Human Shield. Previous outlet it's had was in connection with Richard Crowe, a veteran performance and sound and installation artist.
Yes, Institution of Rot.
Institution of Rot, which relates to a private performance club he had in a house he lived in from the early 1980s till he lost the place very recently, and is now ongoing events and sometimes publications by people who are involved in that or he knew up since then a demised premise of real or supposed archival material about the institution of rot. But Human Shield, the outlet for that was another concern of his called Hospital Radio, or Towards an Imaginary Hospital Radio, for which there's a track and an artist page by myself and Richard Crowe in a CD album and a book, Soundworks, for Those Who Have Ears, produced by Julie Forrester, Niamh Lawler, Danny McCarthy and Harry Moore, Art Trail, County Cork, Republic of Ireland, 2005. For the original recording on that album, Crowe gave me a contact mic to press onto my throat when I recited Human Shield, generating a very disturbing quality, almost like some kind of suppressed archival recording to the end result. And I use contact mics in that way, but sometimes myself and Crowe have performed together, myself reciting Human Shield, and also usually medical-related found texts that Crowe has chosen, while Richard Crowe generates sort of industrial or noise, son et lumière, sort of music and noise and light show. But anyway, as for this literary prose, written art story, Human Shield. Recapitation therapy operations require three components. A. Exoskull visor. Then B. Slotted insertion underlay mask implant. And C. Cavity insulation mummifying bandages. Ordered according to a completely different sequence from predecessors, taken over from by exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages. The winning formula. Between exoskull visor and slotted insertion underlay mask implant is where cavity insulation mummifying bandages grow, performing emergency, life-saving, miracle cure, cosmetic, plastic surgery, facelift treatment, and healing of injury and symptom. Poised on standby for attendance to damage repair and mistake correction tasks on exoskull visor and slotted insertion underlay mask implant, whom are gratefully indebted to cavity insulation mummifying bandages for these services rendered. When gift wrapping removal time, moment of truth is due, exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages come off, break up, flake, crumble, melt, dissolve, and evaporate away, each taking the others with them as they go, leaving no trace behind of exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages, destroying the evidence. Acupuncture, bloodletting, fuel refills and injected transfusion encourage sloughed scales and flayed hide, molted and shed by exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages to mingle together and breed replacement superior strain of exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages, giving birth to new and improved selves of their former shadows. Composite of exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages. Consume and feed each other and everything that comes their way. Fusion. Uniting exoskull visor, slotted insertion underlay mask implant, and cavity insulation mummifying bandages into one whole, linking up to different separate entities they intercept and encounter. That also came to mind because of the connotations of plastic surgery or maxillofacial medicine,
yes,
of these very premises we are in at the moment.
Yeah, we are recording this interview in plastic surgery clinic. Under the plastic surgery
actually,
not in the operation theatre.
You could say the longest writing I've ever done was actually assisting somebody with their memoirs, advice or proofreading, and sometimes other input, although it was very much their own work. The Ugandan maxillofacial surgeon and man of many parts, and some might say hero, Dr. Arnold Spiro Bizasi. His memoirs very much recount his family and his community's life, born around the time, I think, World War II started, then growing up with late colonial era and then independence, Africa. He was schooled in Egypt, but just at the time, in the 50s, when the revolution exploded. And
what was his nationality?
He's Ugandan. He's from either the Buganda or Luganda region, or the Luganda or the Bugandan tribe. I keep getting them mixed up. And he studied in the United Kingdom before he finally came here in the late 1970s. He had visited or worked or studied in the UK and elsewhere several times. And he's best known for, as well as other things he did, literally saving the face of a girl who was savaged by a wild hyena. And she's now, she's still alive or still working. She's now a very distinguished nurse in Australia. But Dr. Arnold Spiro Bizasi lives, I think, in Southall, which is a suburb of West London, mostly inhabited by Indo-Asians. But as well as sort of the lighter moments, or the sort of almost event, his memoirs are called Guardian Angel. Some of the references to, you know, the outcomes of despots and tyrants and unrest in Uganda, such as first the rather slimy and pathetic Apollo Milton Obote, who actually got back into power, and then the rather retarded and ludicrous seeming but extremely harmful and dangerous Idi Amin. It was quite an experience and an undertaking being involved with that job. And I forget the name of the publisher. I haven't got it with me in Korea, but I've only got one copy. It was like double volume memoirs, Guardian Angel by Dr. Arnold Spiro Bizarse. It is some Indian publisher that actually published it. Please forgive the fact I cannot remember the name of the publisher, but that is perhaps the most lengthy writing I've ever done, but it was very much supportive towards someone else and myself not really wishing to tread on their feet out of my respect and reverence towards them.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Is there any more question you'd like to...
Questions we would wish to ask.
Or, yeah. Shall we...
Wrap it up?
Well, I remember nobody seems to know the origins or meanings in Korean of the family surname Park.
We will find that out for you.
Yeah, after this interview. There's like a ton...
Is it a word in Korean, Park?
As far as I remember, there's like a, in I mean, I may
because place names and family names are often nothing like words.
In the 5th century DC, there was this, Korea was divided by 3 country kingdoms, and one of the kingdoms, the king of one of this kingdom was named after Park. I think so, and that's where
it can be a forename as well as a family surname.
It's the family name of one of the kings from the 5th century.
At one time, a third of Korea was
divided by
was Park.
Yeah,
it was all parkland. They often say about the United Kingdom.
That's when you should have had the exhibition. Okay.
Douglas Park World.
Yeah. Thank you for coming.
Thank you
very much for inviting me.
We'll send you down.
And I have to thank Gregory and Nayungim and Kim and many countless others without which none of this would have been possible for making all this happen.
You're most welcome.
Thank you.